On this episode of FPL 360, we talk about the return of European fixtures and a crazy game week 5. Chuck, Europa League, Champions League, the group stage is set. The competition is about to start tomorrow. Which matches are you the most excited for?
I'm assuming you're saying outside of Spurs playing.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
So for Champions League, I want to take a break for the Premier League for a second, and it's Dortmund-Barcelona.
Yeah, I think it's hard to pick a competitor with that, looking outside the Premier League. In terms of, I guess, matchups I'm looking forward to that maybe wouldn't be your first choice in terms of competitiveness, I'm probably going to go with, I'm interested to see how the Benfica-Leipzig match turns out.
I'd also go with the Ajax Losi Lil one as well.
In terms of the Premier League teams, on Tuesday, Chelsea hosts Valencia. Liverpool travel to Napoli. On Wednesday, Manchester City plays away to Shakhtar. And Chuck Spurs go to Olympiacos. Out of those four, which club do you think has the toughest matchup?
First, can we talk about how does Man City keep getting Shakhtar over and over?
I don't know. That's interesting, though. They don't have a tough group at all with Dinamo Zagreb, Shakhtar, and Atalanta.
No, they do not. In terms of the toughest game, Liverpool's the toughest game on paper, but it's probably Chelsea-Valencia.
With that in mind, which team do you think will most likely be rotating come the weekend based upon their matchups?
Probably a mixture of Liverpool and Tottenham coming from the Champions League ones. Europa League wise, it's going to be Wolves.
Yeah, I would say the Europa League fixtures are the ones where I'd be a little bit, you know, looking at Wolves, and I guess we'll just start there with their match. They were slapped around quite a bit at Molineux by Chelsea 5-2 over the weekend. The impact on that squad, they've already made 10 changes to their starting 11 through the first 5 matches. Last season, it took them 16 matches to make as many changes.
There's also the fact that apparently their strikers only know how to score in Europe.
Yeah, Jimenez has not gotten off the mark like people had hoped this season, with him coming off his excellent debut campaign in the Premier League. How big of a worry is this for Wolves moving forward? And I guess, do you think Jimenez is going to come good?
Eventually, I think he will. I don't view this, as long as Wolves are doing well in Europa, I don't think this is a concern for Wolves going forward. This is 100% a concern for managers owning Wolves players in their various fantasy games moving forward, as the only consistent performer from that team has been João Moutinho, who's gotten dropped.
Yeah, it's tough to get a read on Wolves right now, and I mean they did run into the buzzsaw that is Frank Lampard's youth revolution. So I wouldn't put too much of an emphasis on this result in terms of negative from Wolves, and more so as a positive from Chelsea. They're the first team in Premier League history to have 11 consecutive goals scored by players aged 21 or younger. Leading that charge is the most criticized player by me in the Premier League, Tammy Abraham, who now has 7 goals in his last 3 starts. I guess he's for real now. I don't know if anyone can get me his agent's email, but I would like to issue a formal apology for calling him a joke. I'm not sold on him being the second coming of Didier Drogba, which Chelsea supporters on Twitter seem to be suggesting. But I do think moving forward, he's probably going to be a top 10 forward in FPL based upon the rate he's scoring. If we look, let's say, a sample size of the next 10 matches, where do you see Abraham ending up in the FPL rankings? Do you think he stays on course and remains in the top 5? Do you think he can challenge Aguero, or should we be expecting a let-off?
First, let me pull up who Chelsea's next 10 are against. Oof.
Liverpool,
It's a
Brighton,
cakewalk.
Southampton, Newcastle, Burnley, Watford, Crystal Palace. Then they get City at the end of November.
Yeah, he's here to stay in the top 10. Probably staying somewhere between Callum Wilson and Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, if you look at it, Callum Wilson, he had the brace over the weekend against Everton. Over 5 matches, he's had an offensive return in each of his appearances. Vardy had 3 and 2 games weeks 4 and game week 3. 2 against Bournemouth and an assist and a goal against Sheffield. But his returns have been bunched there. Sticking with Chelsea, the other guy in focus, obviously, is Mason Mount. Right now, his ownership is up to 24.3% in FPL. He's owned everywhere in Fantrax. You're starting him if you have him. His price is at 6.5, and it's been rising at an alarming rate,
Oh wow, he's at 6.5
unsurprisingly,
now.
due to his form. We discussed it earlier with getting on Pukki before his price went up too high. Is 6.5 the, I guess, what do you see Mount's ceiling being? Do we need to get him now if you want to get him in without having to rework your team? Or is he really just a wild card candidate at this point?
I'd say you definitely still need to get him in now, considering that Chelsea just after Liverpool doesn't have a bad fixture again until Man City, which like w based on how Man City performed this weekend, are we sure that's a bad fixture for your attackers? Not really. Mount is now level with Manuel Lanzini in price, which is usually what you'd be spending on about your midfielder four in FPL. So like if you don't get him now, he's gonna be Pookie priced at seven or above sooner than you know it.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mount this week. It doesn't matter that they play Liverpool at home. He has 8 shots on target, which, when I was looking at it from a Fantrax perspective, in terms of all the players classified as midfielders, that is the highest total at the position. He also has 11 key passes, which puts him in the top 5. So, look, he's doing enough from the other metrics to suggest his chances are going to keep coming. And with the way Tammy Abraham's playing, it looks like chances are going to be falling to everyone in midfield. Christian Pulisic did not start against Wolves. Is this a suggestion, suggesting he's going to be starting against Valencia in the Champions League? Or is there something else at play here?
I'd assume it's a mixture of one, he'll probably be starting versus Valencia, and two, there's just the realistic fact that Chelsea has a lot of wingers and they don't have a lot of players at a lot of other positions. So Mount's place is just going to be that much more nailed on than Pulisic's. as is Tammy Abrahams.
Yeah, the run of matches coming up, I think we're going to get to see a better depiction of what Pulisic's going to offer for the rest of the season. And this, in my opinion, has something to do with, you know, I'm expecting them to have their way with possession in the majority of those matches. So he'll be able to get up the field, probably in a little bit better attacking positions. This is something to consider with all of Chelsea's attackers. As we can see, Willian and Pedro rotated in as the fixtures get congested. Before you move on, Tomori has started the back-to-back matches. So he started before the international break with his debut against Sheffield United, and then he operated in a back three when Chelsea used the wide center backs against Wolves. With the youth movement in focus, do you think he's here to stay as the long-term partner alongside Antonio Rudiger, or do we see maybe the three center back set remaining with him, Christensen, and Rudiger grounding the defense?
Well, number one, it depends, because Rudiger did injure his groin again in that game, so we'll see when he comes back. There's also the fact that the back three was done solely to accommodate Marcos Alonso playing. So I fully believe that Frank Lampard would rather play a back four, and a back four also makes sense when you have a healthy N'Golo Kante. But I don't see why Tomori can't win a starting spot in the Chelsea lineup.
Are you thinking about him as someone to target on the waiver wire this week?
I'm still not 11%. Thinking about Chelsea defenders in general. Because let's not forget that he had, what was it, 0.5 or negative 0.5 in his first start?
He had negative 0.5 in his first start, although he did add 8 interceptions, and he did see more ball than any other Chelsea defender in the match. I would consider him, if you're in a 12-team league and you're looking to add a defender without probably having to spend much, you could probably put in a claim. I don't think you'd have to bid on him. So maybe if you're trying to conserve your fab this week, he could be someone to add and keep on your bench. And the next match is the one everyone's been talking about. Norwich City defied the odds with a superb all-around effort to hand Manchester City their first league loss since January of last season. I did not see this coming. I don't think anyone did.
If anyone who is not a Norwich fan saw this coming, they're liars. I do also have an apology to issue to Norwich fans, as I basically laid into their defense in my article on RotoWorld last week, and the press definitely gave Man City problems.
The thing that surprised me the most about this match, and now I obviously Otamendi and Stones is not the center back pairing Guardiola drew up in the beginning of the season, but they are both experienced players. It was just very weird to see how shaky they were. And when you look at the goals, one of them came off of poor marking on a set piece, and then there was that unexcusable mistake trying to play out of the back.
I actually have a couple things here, because this City lineup left me scratching my head on so many levels. Number one, Ilkay Gundogan has just not performed in a City shirt when giving true responsibility in the middle of the park. Number two, leaving out Riyad Mahrez when you know you're going to need to break the lines against Norwich and pace up top to hit it over the top to someone, or him being able to start the break with his wicked ball into the final third, probably good to have. Then there's the fact that John Stones is better in a back three than he is in a back four. And you also have Kyle Walker, who's capable of playing as the right-sided center back at a back three, which would have just allowed you to slide Cancelo into the lineup.
Yeah, I don't know why we haven't seen Cancelo yet. Also, it would have... in my opinion, it would have made sense to have KDB in the starting 11, considering you were going to need someone to be able to pick a perfect pass with how Norwich were bunkered in. Timu Pukki had a goal and an assist. He's now been involved in 8 goals in his first 5 matches. I expected him to score. I did not think Norwich were going to make this a competitive match. But looking at the other stats of note from the Canaries, Emiliano Buendia is the first midfielder to have as many assists. Sorry, I wrote the stat down wrong.
He has as many assists as Hazard in, like, his first 5 league games or something like that.
Okay, yeah, I messed that up.
It's still really good. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's worth mentioning to show how well he's performed. Now, I don't really know. To be honest, I'm having trouble pinning a value on Buendia, especially in FPL. Long term.
Well, the problem in FPL is that he's screwed over by his other teammates. Because in FPL, if you're gonna bring in a Norwich midfielder, it's gonna be Todd Cantwell because he's playing also in extremely attacking positions, and he's still 1.3 million cheaper than Buendia.
Yeah. It's tough. There's a lot of budget options there. My question, in terms of what City does going forward, do you think we'll see Fernandinho at center back this weekend?
I don't see why not. If this game didn't tell you that the defense is not working, I'm not sure what will.
In Fantrax, sticking with their defense, what should we be doing with Cancelo?
It depends. If you're able to hold him, I would still hold him, just due to the fact that once City gets healthy, their defensive options are still better than most teams and most things that you're going to find on the waiver wire. But if you're a team that's only holding 4 defenders and it's like him versus holding Luke Shaw, drop him.
Yeah, if you can, I agree. If you can, I would hold him. I think, I'm not sure why he hasn't gotten a run yet, but I do think there's enough there to make him a very valuable asset if you can hold. I wouldn't do it at jeopardizing if you're relying on a rotating defender on your bench. But I do think there's value to be found there, and I wouldn't give up just yet. A team that we had given up on came to life over the weekend. Watford showed their attacking intent, clawing back from 2 goals down at halftime to draw Arsenal in Kike Sanchez Flores' first match since being reappointed as Hornets boss. We talked about how we didn't want to pass judgment until this fixture occurred. And the big points of note, Flores used a 4-2-3-1 formation. The attacking trio was comprised of De La Feo, Cleverley, and Hughes, and Andre Gray was up top. I had to double check. I thought maybe there was something wrong with the screen when I looked at the highest scores in Fantrax this week. De La Feo had 39.5 freaking points.
With only 1 assist. I didn't even think this score was possible.
I'm having a trouble thinking of a time that someone's done anything to that level, but De La Feu and Cleverley, yeah.
To say
this it's gonna blow your mind. De La Feu and Cleverley combined for 14 shots of Watford's 31, and they had 7 of their 10 on target.
And 23 of Watford's shots were in the second half. So I'd feel pretty comfortable saying Deulofeu and Cleverley just had the best second halves ever in Fantrax history.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it, because watching Deulofeu play the game, outside of him beating Arsenal defenders, you mostly saw him shooting wide left.
Yeah, I mean, he is capable of cutting inside. Now, there also needs to be something to said. I don't know what the hell's going on with Arsenal.
Socrates is actually trying to show that he's a worse defender than Navi Luiz.
Yeah, they have Tweedledee and Tweedledum in central defense right now. But on Cleverley, he's owned in 4% of Fantrax leagues. I'm under the impression that if he continues to play in that central attacking midfield role, there will be value. But I don't see him becoming a weekly must start by any means.
But he probably takes on the same role that you were anticipating having Will Hughes in, especially since if there's any player that you could look under Kike Sanchez's chance, his name's a goddamn tongue twister, Kike Sanchez Flores, and say that was one of his favorites, and it's not outside of Troy Deeney, it's Tom Cleverley.
Would you prefer to have Cleverley or Will Hughes moving forward?
Cleverley.
Yeah, it's something to note. I'm probably going to include Cleverley on my Fantrax waiver wire column that should be coming out tonight or early tomorrow morning. I'm not sure where I'm going to stand on him. I do think he's worth an ad in deeper leagues, but I need to look at Watford's fixture list before I go ahead and say he's a must add. Bournemouth finally looked like the attacking outfit we expected in preseason, as they rode a Callum Wilson brace to a 3-1 victory over Everton at the Vitality Stadium. The big note for me here was the formation Eddie Howe went with. We had Callum Wilson and Dominic Solanke up front, Josh King and Harry Wilson out wide in a 4-4-2 with Ryan Fraser on the bench.
And they caused problems.
They're also worth noting Diego Rico and Jack Stacey started at left and right back. Was a shakeup all Bournemouth needed to jumpstart their season?
I don't even know if they necessarily needed the shakeup, because they were still better when Ryan Fraser came into the game for Harry Wilson, but just getting back to basics is probably what they needed.
Yeah, what do we make of King playing out on the right side of midfield?
I'm not sure. I don't hate it, because when Josh King came to Bournemouth, that was his position. I don't know if I like it, because Josh King has shown that he can be lethal up top, but he's also probably needed something to jumpstart him getting into the box, and putting Solanke into the lineup isn't a bad thing, considering that's just drawing even more attention away from defenders for Bournemouth to overrun you. My biggest takeaway is Lewis Cook is back.
Yeah, I think with Cook and Philip Billing being the two guys in central midfield, with them being both more inclined defensively, wherever King, Wilson, Fraser, Solanke, whoever plays where, it is more of a 4-2-4, in a sense that I wouldn't be worried about seeing King playing out on the wing as a big knock to his value in fantasy. And I know we like to talk about how important Cook is, but just to rehash our stance on him, how important is he to Bournemouth?
After Ryan Fraser and Colin Wilson, he's the third most important player to that team.
Taking a look at Everton, obviously this is a disappointing result. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was in the starting lineup though, and he did get off the mark scoring a goal. What else can we take away from this match? I mean, Richarlison did hit the crossbar, but was this more of a Bournemouth outperforming Everton, or did Everton just not come to play?
A mixture of the two. Bournemouth outperformed Everton. Bournemouth's midfield didn't allow Everton to come to play. Richarlison is starting one of his hot streaks.
Looking at Lucas Digne in fantasy, specifically FPL, we actually got a question from Nate Crooks on Twitter. In draft leagues, is it time to try and move off of Lucas Digne? Much like Arsenal, Everton can't keep a clean sheet, so he's heavily reliant on attacking returns. Is he someone to look to trade away right now?
So let's preface this with Lucas Digne is averaging 13.15 points per game in a draft league. Yeah, he's had two single digit performances in his last four, but he's bookended those with a 27 point performance and a 15 point performance in which Everton still allowed two goals. You
Yeah, I
don't
wouldn't.
trade Lucas
Yeah.
Digne for just about anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't be panicking yet. He is the second highest scoring defender right now behind Trent Alexander-Arnold. And if you look at the attacking metrics, Arnold's in first with 21 key passes, Digne's in second with 12. I wouldn't be concerned yet. I mean, if somebody wants to offer you a very enticing offer, but the thing is, you have to realize you're not, you're probably, what are you selling him as? Because my issue is I don't think you would be able to get a fair trade in return, even if you did a
You
two for one.
really can't because Lucas Digne, basically there's a four, maybe five defender tier for true defender ones this year. Lucas Digne, Andrew Robertson, Virgil van Dijk, and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And if you are looking at trying to trade them with the fact that they're averaging around 10 to 13 points a game, you're going to be looking at least a forward 1.5 or a midfielder 2 in return. No one's given that up for a defender.
Yeah, I would sit tight on him. And as he proved last season, I mean, obviously Everton had a ton of clean sheets, but the issue is the attacking upside you'll lose in him, you won't be able to recover even if even if you have a bunch of other, attack-minded defenders on the bench. I just don't think you can get anywhere near close to a fair offer in return.
Also, can we look at the Everton schedule coming up?
Yeah, I mean, do we see more clean sheets in the cards? They have Sheffield United, City, Burnley, West Ham, Brighton through game week 10.
I see no reason why they shouldn't be able to get 2-3.
Yeah, I'm not pivoting off of Lucas Digne in FPL either.
I will say I heavily thought about it until I was doing one of my usual weekend back and forths with Brandon Marcus, in which he helped me realize that I'm an idiot for even thinking about it.
Yeah, I just don't think you can. I don't think you can get rid of him right now.
His only real pivot in FPL is Ricardo Pereira. Who and one, you can own both of them.
Yeah.
Two, you don't want to own Pereira for maybe 2 to 3 more game weeks.
Yeah, Leicester City have Spurs, Newcastle, Liverpool in their next three. So yeah, I would agree there. Speaking of Spurs, they cruised to a 4-0 win over Crystal Palace. The player in focus here was Son. He continued his good run of form against Crystal Palace. This time, netting twice. He got 16 points in FPL. He also had a very, very good day in Fantrax. In total, he ended the match with 28.5 points. Now, obviously, the discussion here is linked more to the Sun Kane debate in FPL. Who do you prefer moving forward?
Okay, so this is a different answer for different formats. If it's FPL,
Well, yeah, let's do FPL first because we have a question for Fantrax.
in FPL, it's Sun. I am actually going back and forth on whether or not I should pull the trigger on a -4 in turning Harry Kane and James Maddison into Roberto Firmino and Heung-min Son. Just because when you look at price versus his potential output, it's literally off the charts. Like Son and KDB are just kind of in brackets of their own in midfield. Unfortunately, Nicolas Pepe needs to score a goal before he can even be considered in that price range. So they're in a range of their own. And if you look at it moving forward, unless something truly goes awry in Champions League this week, he's going to get a lot of transfers in.
We have a question on Twitter from GD Bristol. He wants to know who would you prefer the rest of the season, Kane or Son, noting that Kane is a goal slash assist dependent forward. Now, this is the angle where we're looking at from a Fantrax perspective. Does your opinion differ there?
Slightly. Number one, you have to remember the fact that Kane was your top five most likely pick for a reason. And that reason's not for the beginning of the season, because we all know that Harry Kane is a slow starter. But hopefully, you were able to build your team in a way that you can, kind of wiggle around those slow starts. But when it comes to end of the season, there are few players that you want to own more than Harry Kane. On the other hand, looking at Son when it comes to Fantrax, he is a rotation risk, and that's something that you have to worry about. Like, the biggest difference between him being a forward two and a forward one is knowing that you're probably not going to get 30 games out of Son over the course of a season.
Yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting in Kane. Nobody, like you said, drafted him expecting his production to come outside of primarily goals and assists. He has had those two down performances. Do you think now is a good time where maybe you could buy Kane for slightly lower, or do you think the price you'll pay is still too high unless you have a wealth of options on your bench?
If I could buy Kane by just trading a forward two for him straight up, or like a forward two plus a defender two or three, I'd do it. Like, literally, if you'll take, let's say, Jamie Vardy and some defender for Harry Kane, I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't see many people going for that. I feel like you'd have to include someone like a Son or a KDB or maybe a Lucas Digne and then maybe like a Callum Wilson to really get someone's attention.
Well, I mean, in those cases, then you keep your players because none of them are really guys that you're trading either, especially KDB, who's is he still the number one overall scorer in Fantrax? Or has
KDB.
Pookie passed him now?
Right now, KDB is the top scoring midfielder on 100 points, and overall, he is third. Timu Pukki's number one on 105. Aguero's number two on 101. So it's pretty tightly contested. The other Spurs player who's worth noting, Serge Aurier had two assists. One via a cross, one via own goal. He got the clean sheet. This morning when I looked, he was owned in 23% of leagues. I'm guessing that
That's gonna
some
jump a
team,
lot tomorrow.
yeah, some leagues must have already had their waivers go through because he's already up to 47%. What kind of value would you be slapping on him? Is he someone to bid with Fab? Is he someone to use a high waiver priority? Or do you think that rotation with the Champions League and the presence of Kyle Walker-Peters means that we should be a little bit less aggressive on getting him in?
I would definitely be a little less aggressive. I don't think that Serge Aurier starts this coming weekend against Leicester City, as Kyle Walker-Peters is returning to fitness, and Aurier probably will have to start the Champions League tie in a very long trip to Olympiacos. I have no issues with you bidding on him, but just remember that for all of the highs with Serge Aurier, he will get reds and yellows and end up like Arthur Masuaku today.
Looking at two guys who would also, I guess, fall into that category of whether we want to pump the brakes or jump on them based upon one good performance or a run of. Looking at Southampton, you have Sofiane Boufal. He had 9 completed dribbles. He had a monster day in Fantrax. If you look at how his points stacked up from game week 5, he ended with 19 points. He also grabbed an assist. And then you have Musa, the other winger, Djenepo.
I believe it's Jenner.
Djenepo, he had 24.5 points. He scored a goal. That is his second goal in as many matches. Which guy do you like more as an add in Fantrax if you had to pick one?
Well, there's one player that I've added, then dropped when he got hurt, and then got burned when he scored, and that's Jenner. Southampton brought him expecting a tricky winger that could score goals. And while it took a little bit for him to get into the lineup, he's shown that he's pretty damn good and he has a shot. He will probably again have his ups and downs, but usually if I'm adding someone off of waivers, I'm not looking for a steady player. I'm looking for someone who can win me the game week. And that's Jennepro.
Yeah, Southampton used a 3-4-2-1 formation with the wing backs. He was preferred to Ryan Bertrand on the left. So in situations where they're not using the 4-2-2-2, this obviously works in his favor. Cedric Suarez was at right back on the other side, so he was able to get forward a bit more. I like him. I think he could become with a, you know, with a regular place in that starting 11, maybe like at a midfielder 4. There is some risk though, just depending upon the formation that Hasenhüttl goes with. So, you know, I wouldn't go too crazy investing in him. But I do prefer him over Buffal.
There's also another Southampton midfielder that you can probably get in your leagues that I would also prefer in over Buffal, and that's Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
Yeah, he has had back-to-back matches with double-digit points without an offensive return. He was owned pretty highly. I think he was over 50% last week. This week he's down to 38%. He's someone definitely to look at. What draws your attention to him specifically?
I mean, you've literally already said it. He's gotten double-digit returns in back-to-back game weeks without any offensive returns. And he is a good for a wonder strike every once in a while. And he has essentially a guaranteed spot in Ralf Hasenhüttl's team.
Yeah, he had 3 key passes this week. That was his standout stat. The week prior, he had 6 interceptions and 3 aerial duels won. So he's getting it done in all the peripheral metrics. Some other buy-high candidates, Christian Atsu has had three performances in double digits and two assists in his last three outings. He grabbed an assist on Yetro Villain's surprise early goal, although Newcastle did end up falling 3-1 to Liverpool at Anfield. Are you interested in Atsu? He's owned in 31% of leagues, and he seems to have a place in the starting 11 right now.
If he's free in your league, I guess you kind of have to take a chance on him. Newcastle frustrates me, man. I don't, because every time I'm like, they're not good, they're not good. They have someone who does something good.
Yeah, I mean, the assist he grabbed, obviously it was unexpected in the beginning of the match, but he cut inside, he took a ball down in his chest and laid out wide to Yetro Willems, who had a pretty powerful strike, find the top right corner of the net. Kind of came out of nowhere. It wasn't like he did anything crazy, more so just being in the right place at the right time. I'm fine putting in a waiver claim for him if you're middle of the pack, but I wouldn't really be... I would let someone else bid with Fab and deal with that. But I do think if you can get him for free with a middle of the pack waiver claim, there is value.
That's a fair assessment.
Looking at Brighton-Burnley, they drew at the Amex. There wasn't... It seemed like Brighton were going to get a clean sheet, and then Jeff Hendrick popped up with a late goal. The big talking point here comes from FPL, and that's your boy, who appears to be the new clear-cut first-choice striker for Brighton.
Sorry, don't you mean winger? Because Glenn Murray still played this game, even though he didn't do much.
Well, I mean, based upon impact, I would classify him as their first choice.
No, that's fair. I'm just giving you shit.
Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of what he provided. But to extrapolate on what Chuck was saying, Brighton went with a front three of Glenn Murray, Mompey, and Pascal Gross. In midfield, we saw Dale Stevens, Davey Proper, Dan Byrne, Solly March. At the back, Shane Duffy, Lewis Dunk, Adam Webster. Looking at them heading into game week 6, there are some cheap options on Brighton. Who's your favorite player going into this match against the team we just mentioned, Newcastle?
It's definitely Mopet, because this should be an open game, and I think he's going to exploit Newcastle. And I do love him, especially at his 6.0 price range in FPL. He kind of annoys the hell out of me as someone who owns him in Fantrax, because you want to talk goal and assist dependent, it doesn't get more goal and assist dependent than Neil Mopay.
Yeah, if you look at his numbers, he had 10.5 points this week with his goal against Burnley. You look at his other matches, he had 2.5 with one shot against Man City, 7 with 4 shots against Southampton, West Ham 2 with 2 shots, and then against Watford off the bench, he had 12 with a goal in 26 minutes. So he is extremely dependent on goals for his production. Before we move on, I wanted to mention that Dan Byrne played on the left side, I believe. No, sorry, on the right side. No, on the left side of midfield in the 3-4-3. Are you interested in him at all in FPL with his price at 4.5 and it looking like he could get more time on the wing with Trossard out for at least 2 more matches?
I'd be fine looking at him, but realistically, you probably, if you're looking at Brighton defenders, you probably got Lewis Dunk before his price rise.
Yeah, I just think it's something to worth, you know, something to consider if you're looking for, maybe you're looking to pivot in defense and upgrade elsewhere. He has looked good going forward. And I mean, the same goes for him in Fantrax. He's up to 39% owned right now. He only had 5.6 75 points. But if he does play up the pitch a little bit more, that is worth noting going into that match against Newcastle. I'm trying to think. I think we covered pretty much everything from game week 5. Was there anything else you thought was noteworthy in terms of results or player performances?
Realistically, I thought that it was an extremely gritty performance by Aston Villa in their match against West Ham today. Some recency biased aside.
Yeah, it ended in a goalless draw, which saw Arthur Masuaku sent off with a red card. Fabianski looked good in net for West Ham. There wasn't much from the attacking group, though, of the Hammers. Who do you think comes away with this match, with more momentum? Was this a case of West Ham just kind of having to hang on after the red card? Do you think Villa should have done more? I only caught the very beginning of this match, so I didn't see how it played out in the second half.
Well, I mean, Villa's going to come away with more momentum because all of their players are available next week. But I will say West Ham laid everything out there with 10 men to do everything they could to try and beat Aston Villa. And that even includes a pretty bright sub appearance from why am I blanking on his name?
Fornals.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, next week I'm guessing we'll see Aaron Cresswell, although I can never really get a read on whether he's out of the team because he's not fit.
We saw Pablo Zabaleta as the sub in that game, so Cresswell may be dead.
Yeah, we will find out. I'm sure we'll have an update on that and what it seems like Pellegrini will be doing when we're back to preview the matches for Game Week 6 later this week. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL_360. And in the majority of places podcasts are located on the internet.